Torah to Go is the weekly Torah CD of the Skokie Community Kollel, sponsored this year in memory of Shmuel Nachman ben Pinchas Herschel and Chana ben Shimshon. And the Divrei Torah you're about to hear have been recorded by members of the Kollel. We hope you enjoy and learn from these Divrei Torah.
Hi, my name is Dovi Turkeltaub. I'd like to share a vort with you on Parshas Matos and try to tie it into the 3 weeks. The beginning of Parshas Matos talks about the Isser of Nedarim. And the Pasuk says, Layachal Devarei, Kechol HaYotze M'Piv Yaseh. Person shouldn't make his words in vain. Everything that comes out of his mouth, he should do. So the Chidah brings down from his grandfather, the Chesed Lavram. He says, any word that a person speaks, if it's a word of a mitzvah, it makes a malach, a kodesh like a malach. If it's words of impurity, it makes a bad malach. And it goes on and says that's the power of the word, that each word that we come out of our mouth creates a power. If it's a good word, it creates a good power, and in the negative, if it's something bad, it creates a bad power. The Reishis Chachma says, how come earlier people, their tefillahs were always answered? We are always hoping and wanting that our tefillahs should be answered. So says the Reishis Chachma, because they were careful not to be pageah, not to have a pigam in the Chaf Beis Oisis, in the Oisis of the Aleph Beis, so that's why their tefillahs, their mouths were so pure that when it came to Davin, their tefillahs went straight to Shemayim and they were answered completely. So the Svarim teach us that if we make sure that we say the right thing, that we use our mouth for the right way, we say something proper to our friends, we give our friends encouragement, and we use our mouth in the proper way as opposed to using it in the negative, speaking negative about our friends, and always using our mouths for the wrong purpose, then our tefillahs will be answered right away, and we'll be zoicha to have the Beis Hamikdash right away. The Gemara tells us in Ksubas, tells a story about Rabbi Yannai, that he made a curse on his son-in-law, a mistake, came out of his mouth, a curse, because he thought he did something wrong, and because he thought his son-in-law did something wrong, he cursed him. And what ended up happening? The curse took effect, and his son-in-law passed away. Says Rabbi Chanan, he doesn't understand. We understand that a tzaddik has a power to take effect on something because that's what he wants to take effect. That the will of a person who fears Hashem, Hashem does that will of that person. But here it was his son-in-law, it was a mistake. He never intended that that thing should take place. So why is it that just because the tzaddik came out of his mouth, that took place? So says Rabbi Chanan, we see from here what the power of the word is. That a person has to be so careful with everything that he comes out of his mouth, that to make sure that it doesn't hurt someone, and he doesn't say anything negative. Because the power is so strong that even if it was done by mistake, it has such a strong effect that what he said can take place. Well, now we're sitting in the time of the 3 weeks. We're yearning for the Beis Hamikdash to be rebuilt. We're hoping for the time that the 3 weeks will be, instead of sadness, will be a time that we can celebrate it once again with the Beis Hamikdash. If we take this lesson to heart and realize the power of our mouth, as opposed to what the Goyim say, sticks and stones might break my bones, but words can never hurt me. And we realize that's a Goyisha saying. By the Yidden, it's the opposite. That words can hurt me. Words can have more powerful than sticks and stones. And if we make sure that everything comes out of our word is proper, and we make sure to only say good things, then those words have the ability to rebuild the Beis Hamikdash once again with sticks and stones. May the Beis Hamikdash be rebuilt speedily in our days. Have a good Shabbos.
This is Aaron Moore. In the Parsha, Parshas Matos, we have the story where Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, the members of Shevet Gad and Reuven, came to Moshe Rabbeinu with a special request. Since they saw that they had a lot of flock and cattle, they requested from Moshe that they inherit the land on Ever HaYarden, which was on the other side of the Jordanian River, and they were originally requesting, before everybody else goes into Eretz Yisrael, they should get that portion. As it says in the Pasuk, that they saw that the land had plenty of pasture for livestock, and therefore they requested it. Rashi points out that the wording that they used was interesting, because the wording that they used goes as follows. In Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Tes Zayin, says the following, Vayoimru, and they said, Gidrois tzoin nivne lemikneinu poi, enclosures for the flock we shall build, and cities for our children. They said first, Gidrois tzoin nivne lemikneinu poi, and then they said, Va'orim letapenu, and cities for our children. So they first spoke about their livestock, then they spoke about their children. Rashi points out, coming from a Chazal, that they cared more about their momon, about their monetary possessions, more than their children. And therefore, they put them first. Omar lohem Moshe, Rashi continues on this pasuk. Omar lohem Moshe, Moshe said, Loikein, not so. Asu ha'ikar ikar, make the main thing, v'hatofel tofel, and the secondary thing should come secondary. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, when he responded to them, switched it around, and Moshe said, "Bnu lachem tchilo orim letapchem, build for yourselves cities for your children, va'achar kein gidrois letzoynachem, and fences for your livestock." So Moshe Rabbeinu switched around the order to teach them that that's the way you're supposed to say it. Now, it just looks like a small encounter that Moshe Rabbeinu switched the order the way it's supposed to be correctly said. But we see from the Medrash Tanchuma that there was more to it than that. It wasn't just the way to say it. It showed how they felt about it, and they were actually punished because of this. On this parsha, the Medrash Tanchuma quotes a pasuk in Mishlei that says the following, Nachla mevoyheles borishoino, a inheritance mevoyheles that is with confusion, borishoino, in the beginning. V'acharisa, and its end, loy savoyrach, will not be blessed. Nachla mevoyheles borishoino, Rashi explains there in Mishlei that a person who jumps to grab something too early, as was with Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven. Rashi gives the example of Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven. Shemiharu litoil chalkom. They hurried to take their possession, be'evar hayarden, and then the word mevoihol, referring to the confusion, Rashi explains, v'dibru bebehola, and they spoke with confusion, shenemar gidrois tzoin, nivne lemekneinu poi. They first said their livestock, v'arim letapenu, and then they said about their children. So that was speaking with confusion. So there was two things here. There was a nachla mevoyheles borishoina. There was the fact that it was with confusion, that's mevoyheles. And then there was the fact that they took it too early, that was borishoina. And on that the pasuk continues, v'acharisa loy savoyroch. And in the end, it will not be blessed. And Rashi explains that because of this, Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven were taken into exile before everyone else. Before all the other Shvatim, the first ones to go into exile many years earlier was Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven. And the Medrash points out that this was because they went in too early. Now, we have to understand, they did have more cattle and more livestock than the rest of Klal Yisrael, and Moshe Rabbeinu really agreed to their deal as long as they wouldn't deter others from going in, and as long as they would keep to their word. Moshe Rabbeinu seemed to be okay with it. As we see in the parasha, eventually Moshe Rabbeinu agreed. There's nothing wrong with somebody looking to facilitate their big livestock. They were just being practical. But we see from the Torah that Chazal are telling us that the way they spoke signified that there was a little bit of imbalance in their attitude. And because of that small imbalance, they were punished. Rav Aaron Kotler, his Sefer Mishnah Rav Aaron, explains a little bit more on this, on the same way that I'm saying, that it wasn't necessarily a problem to request it, but what was going on underneath their attitude was the problem. The fact that they said first our livestock, and then they said their children, they said it in that order, showed that right then it was more important to them. As Rashi says, they were more particular and cared more about their possession than about their livestock. And Moshe Rabbeinu, when he switched it around, Moshe Rabbeinu was catching them on this and showing them that your attitude is wrong. And Rabbi Aaron explains that the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael has a different level on Eivar Liyardin than it does in actual Eretz Yisrael. Even though for many dinim, both parts of the Jordanian River had some din of Eretz Yisrael because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it to Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven, but min HaTorah, one is not obligated to bring Bikurim from that part, from the part of Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven. And furthermore, the Ran in the third Perek of Nedarim, Daf Chav Beis, I believe, says that the chiyuv of Omer and Shtei Halechem did not apply to the part of Evel HaYarden that Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven had. So on some level, it had a lower level of Kedusha. And because of that, Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven should have weighed up with a little bit more caution and more hesitation than they did. They were a little too fast to make the judgment. Yes, they needed Evel HaYarden because, practically speaking, they needed it for the livestock, and that was the sensible thing. But they should have waited up a little bit more. And what gave it away that they were too enthusiastic about it was the fact that they put it first. The way a person speaks, every action, every nuance of a person comes because of an inner agenda. It very often signifies and is an indicator of what's going on inside. But here, Chazal are telling us that there was an imbalance of the way they viewed money, that they care too much about their money and too little about the balance between ruchnius and money. As Rashi calls it, one is an ikur and one is a tofel. An ikur means that is the priority, and the tofel is that the other one is secondary. Moshe Rabbeinu was telling them, always keep one priority and one secondary. What I believe Moshe was also telling them, when Moshe fixed the way they spoke, Moshe wasn't just trying to tell them, oh, I caught you, I see where your imbalance is. Moshe Rabbeinu was also telling them that by way of speech, we can actually affect the way we think. It's a concept that goes through much of the Torah, and the Chinuch expounds on it in many places, that every slight action, and even the way we speak, has an effect on the way we think and the way we feel. As the Chinuch coins the phrase, Ha'odom nifal kafi pu'uloisov, a person is affected by his actions, and a person's speech also. When a person speaks in a coarse manner, or in a not refined manner, that affects the way a person thinks and a person feels. Moshe Rabbeinu's Lashon was, Rashi says, Moshe didn't just say that you got it wrong. Moshe actually switched it around. Amar lahem Moshe loikein, asu ha'ikr ikav ha'tofel tofel. Rashi's Lashon is, Moshe said to them, don't say it like that. Asu, do the priority and the secondary secondary. Moshe Rabbeinu was telling them that I want you to be particular how you speak, because if you're particular how you speak, eventually it'll rub off on you. We have to be extra careful in this concept of the ikur and the tofel, because it's not natural. Naturally, we're all born, maybe there's a few Anoshim Gedolim that they write in biographies that were born differently, but for the most part, we're born that we care more about our materialistic needs. Those are the needs that we can see with our naked human eye. And we naturally care more about those things. Our spiritual needs, we don't appreciate naturally, and therefore the Chazal tell us that Divrei Torah Tzrichim Chizuk, things that have to do with Torah, things that have to do with spirituality, constantly need Chizuk. Without that, it doesn't stand a chance. And we have to constantly remind ourselves what is priority and what is secondary. That all our assets, our business, our money is all secondary. That's all just a means to get us to where we need to go. But the priority is our Torah and our mitzvahs. And even the way we speak about it, even if we don't really feel that way, but just by talking that way, that if we talk in a manner that shows what's the ikur and what's the tofel, it eventually can rub off on us. As Rashi says in Parshas Vayeschanan on the pasuk v'dibarta bom, the pasuk that we say at least twice a day in the parasha of Ahavto, v'dibarta bom b'shivtcha b'veisecha, Rashi says v'dibarta bom, shelo yehei ikur diburcha elo bom. It does not mean we can only speak about Divrei Torah. For most of us, that's not possible. We have to talk about mundane things, and we have to deal with the mundane world. But Rashi continues over there, Shelo yehei ikur diburcha elo bom, ta'aseim ikur ve'al ta'aseim tofel. Make them priority, don't make them secondary. Meaning when we talk about Torah, that's where we should be lively. That's where we should live. That's where we should be enthusiastic. That should be our priority. It should be noticeable the way we talk that that's our priority. And I would add, even if we don't really feel that, but just by talking in that manner, it rubs off on us. As Moshe Rabbeinu was telling Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, don't say it like that. So turn it around. Say it differently. Because by saying it differently, it'll eventually rub off that we'll be able to make the ikur ikur and the tofel tofel.
Shalom Aleichem, everyone. This is Eric Goldman from the Skokie Kollel, and it is my honor to share with you some words of Torah for Parshas Matos and Maaseh. Just this afternoon, I happened to reach into my pocket, and I pulled out a dollar. And I noticed on the dollar there was a smudged red stamp with some lettering on it on the dollar bill. And so I sat down to try to look at it and to see what exactly it said. And finally, I was able to figure out that the stamp said, "Would you like to know where this dollar bill has been?" And then it gave a web address. And it said, wheresgeorge.com. So I figured, why not? Let me check it out. So I go online, I check out wheresgeorge.com. It turns out this dollar bill that I just pulled out of my pocket, 1 year and 134 days ago, somebody won it from the Jumer's Casino in Rock Island, Illinois. That was 1 year and 134 days ago. I got this dollar bill, I'm pretty sure, from the barber shop on Devon Avenue a couple of weeks ago. And so it got me thinking a little bit. What happened to this dollar bill over the last year and 134 days? And then I realized, do I even care what happened to this dollar bill over the last year? As long as right now this dollar bill is in my pocket, that's all that really matters. So what difference does it make what happened beforehand? I have it now. Parshas Maaseh begins with the Torah recalling all of Bnei Yisrael's travels through the desert. And all of the Rishonim deal with the same question, and many of the Achronim deal with as well, and it's the topic of so many speeches and drushas. Why does the Torah go so at length in describing every single one of the Jewish encampments? After all, everything we need to know about their travels to the desert, we were already told through the last three Svarim of the Torah. Through Shmos, through Vayikra, through Bamidbar, we were told so many stories. Why do we need to know anything else? This is something that's dealt with at length in so many of the Rishonim and Achronim. Before we discuss some of their answers, we have to give the Hakdama, we have to give the introduction of Rav Shalom Noach Berzovsky in his Sefer Nesiv HaShalom. Because there Rav Berzovsky explains that when we look at these Masaos, when we look at these travels, we have to understand that the Torah is not just telling us historical facts. The Torah is not just explaining to us that the Jews thousands of years ago went through a journey. But rather we have to view this as a symbolic way of expressing the journey that every single Jew goes through in their own individual lives. That every single one of us, we have our ups, we have our downs, we have our different stages that we go through. We have our good times, we have our bad times. And every single one of us is going through this journey. And when we look at these 42 camps that Bnei Yisrael went through, so that is just a symbol of our understanding that we too are going through our journey. Just like they left Mitzrayim and their ultimate goal was Eretz Yisrael, so too we are born and we come into this world and we are trying to reach our ultimate goal of Olam Haba. And we have our encampments too. And so when we look at the explanations of what the Rishonim say about these encampments and why the Torah has to go so at length in explaining them, we have to understand how much it really applies to our very lives. And the Rishonim really do go at length in terms of explaining what these encampments are all about. We'll start just quickly with a couple of them. Rashi explains that lest we think that for 40 years, Hashem was dragging the Jewish people from here to there, from here to there, and they never had a moment's rest. Every single day, they were going somewhere else. But rather, if we look at the timeline very carefully, we'll see that there was 35 plus years of no traveling. That all of the encampments took place at the very beginning and at the very end. But in the middle, there was such a long time period where the Jewish people were able to just rest and stay in the desert. And so to see the chesed and to see the kindness that Hashem did for us in not dragging us all around the desert. The Ramban explains the reason why the Torah has to explain all the different places that we went, even though it's irrelevant where exactly we went, was because in the future, there would be historians who would say that it wasn't a miracle that the Jewish people lasted through all 40 years in the desert because they were constantly near sources of food and water. So therefore, says the Ramban, the Torah has to explicitly lay out for us, they were nowhere near anything that could sustain them. The only way possible that they made it through 40 years in the desert was through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's the explanation of the Ramban. But what I want to focus on begins with the Rabbeinu Bechaye. Because the Rabbeinu Bechaye explains that the reason why the Torah has to explain every single encampment that the Jewish people went through on their way from Mitzrayim all the way into Eretz Yisrael is to show that they were not wandering aimlessly. Hashem wasn't just taking them from here to there without a plan. There was a specific reason why we had to go from this place until that place. And then from this place, we had to go to the next place. HaKadosh Baruch Hu always had the next step in mind, as he always does. He had a reason for taking us from here to there. And that's why the Torah lays out all 42 of the steps to show that it wasn't just Hashem dragging us to the desert, but rather these were 42 calculated steps that got us from the beginning in Mitzrayim all the way to Eretz Yisrael. And each step along the way was crucial in our being able to reach Eretz Yisrael in the right way. But the Rabbeinu B'chai goes on to even strengthen his point and make it even deeper. And he says that part of our understanding these travels through the desert was not only what HaKadosh Baruch Hu had in mind and what his plan was, but it was also what the Jewish people were thinking as they were being taken from one place to the next. Because in each place, we had a particular mindset. We had something that we were thinking and we were focusing on. And from that place, we went to somewhere else where we started thinking something different about our lives and where we were holding and what we were up to, what we wanted to accomplish in that stage of our lives. And at each step that Hashem was taking us from this place to that place, we followed with him and we elevated our mindset and we elevated the way we looked at our lives. And we were able to go through all of those different stages, constantly growing and striving along with how Hashem was taking us forward. But it gets one step deeper, because this is all very nice when we know what the plan is. This is all very nice when we see that the next stage in life is a wonderful stage. It's beautiful to think that the next stage in life is when we're going to be getting married, or we're going to be having children, or we're going to be starting a wonderful new job, or buying a beautiful new house. Those are the next steps in life that give us so much excitement and so much enthusiasm to jump into that stage and to run into it with all of our happiness, with all of our simcha. However, what if we know that the next step is not something good, not something positive? What if we know, chas v'shalom, the next step is something bad, that we're going through a tragic time in our lives? Says the Sforno, perhaps even worse, what if we don't even know what the next step in our lives is? We don't know if it's going to be good. We don't know if it's going to be bad. A fork is placed in the road. We don't know where to go. We've tried to weigh out both sides of the equation. We've tried to think, is this better? Is that better? And we just simply don't know what to do. We don't know what the best course of life is. And even then, to look up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to say, Hashem, I don't know what the next step in my life should be. I don't know what this next stage that I'm approaching is going to bring into my life. But whatever it may be, Hashem, I'm going to follow you because I trust and I believe in why you are guiding me along this path. And that, says the Sforno, is the deepest level that the Jews were able to reach. That even without knowing what the next step was, even without knowing perhaps where Hashem was taking them. Sometimes they did. Sometimes they were told, we're going to this place for a better reason. Sometimes, unfortunately, they had to be brought to a different place for a bad reason. And perhaps the scariest, sometimes they didn't even know why they were being taken to the next place. And yet, they followed with full emunah. And like we said from the Nesiva Shalom, this is a model for our lives. Because of all the stages we go through, sometimes it will be clear exactly what the next step is, and we're so besimcha, and we see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hand in our lives as we take on that next stage. Sometimes there's a tragedy, sometimes there's something sad going on in our lives, and we try as best as we can to deal with it with as much emunah and bitachon as we can. And perhaps even on the scariest level, sometimes we just have no idea what the next step in life is going to bring. And still, even then, we have to approach it with the fullest amount of emunah that we can. Be'ezus Hashem Yisparach, as we read through this parsha of the Jewish people traveling through the desert, as they started the Mitzrayim and they reached Eretz Yisrael, as some of the other Rishonim explained, that this is a model for how the Jewish people through history will end up going through the ultimate redemption. And at this time, during the 3 weeks, There's no better model for us to look into and for us to gain strength and to gain chizuk in our own lives and in the lives of all of Klal Yisrael throughout history, to be able to see that whatever the next step is, whatever the stage is that we're going through life, we rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we see that He's guiding us, and Be'ezus Hashem, we should always be able to view Hashem's hand in every step of life. Thank you and have a great Shabbos.
This is Aaron Rosenberg. At the end of the Parsha, the Torah discusses the Ari Miklat, the cities of refuge that if a person murders accidentally, that he flees to the Ari Miklat. And the Torah says that you can't take koifer. One cannot take a payment of atonement for the life of the killer. He has to be tried for his crime. Belotiku koifer lenus el ir miklato. And also he can't take money in order to flee to Ari Miklat. Says the Torah, velo tachanifu esa aretz. And there shouldn't be a process of chanifa to the land. Because this blood is going to do chanifa to this land, the land lo yechupel adam, and the land will not have atonement for the blood that was spilled there, except for the one who spilled the blood. So I purposely did not translate the word tachanifu because it's hard to really translate. Tachanifa usually means flattery. Rashi says the word tachanifu means lo tarshiyu, you shall not make evil. And he says, like the Targum says, "Velo techayvun, you shall not bring it into bad repute." So the word chanifa over here isn't usually as it's used to mean flattery, because it wouldn't make sense to use a flattery. Rashi says it means don't make the land bad. And the Torah continues, "Lo tetame es haaretz asher atem yoshim bo." Don't contaminate the land which you are dwelling there. Says the pasuk, "Asher ani shochein betocho," because I dwell amongst it. "Ki ani Hashem shochein betoich bnei Yisrael." I'm the one who dwells amongst the Jewish people. So Shem Shavar Hirsch explains this word chanifa is to mean to play a hypocrite, to put on an air of piety, to present an appearance externally which by no means corresponds to the inner reality. And that is really what flattery is all about. Chanifa, flattery, is when you give an external appearance towards a person, but innerly you really don't feel that way. So that's chanifa. And therefore, that's a similar way with this land, that by not taking justice for the blood that was spilt in this land, you create a situation of chanifa, of hypocrite, because a terrible thing has taken place. Blood has been spilt on this land. And by ignoring it, or by taking payment, or allowing a person to flee justice, that itself is treating the land like a hypocrisy. How can this land, which is producing a rich abundance under Hashem's hashkacha, with Hashem's sunshine and His dew, but this land itself is absorbing the blood which was spilt, and we're going to tolerate the murder and the manslaughter, then this land, which is producing all its good and absorbing Hashem's blessing, is also the same land which had absorbed this person's blood. And by letting this just go and not taking justice, that creates a hypocrisy in this land. As we see that when Cain killed Hevel, Hashem told Cain, "The voice of your brother's blood cries out to me from the land." So if the land is going to be crying out and we are going to ignore it, that is creating a situation of hypocrisy in our relationship with the land. Therefore, the Torah says justice must be done. If murder takes place, then the murderer needs to face justice. Shem Shavar Hirsch explains, being that the blood of a person is connected with his nefesh, and the idea of the nefesh is really the bridge between the heaven and the earth. It is through the blood that we survive, that we live. We are able to be on the land and also be connected to the heavenly spheres. When that blood is spilt improperly and justly, so then that breaks the condition which the soil of its land belongs to. Its connection to heaven is through mankind, and that creates hypocrisy if we can ignore the injustice done to that blood. If by society we recognize the importance of life, and we recognize the severity of taking that life as a nation on its land, then we are not doing chanifa, we're not doing the hypocrisy. Because when we shed blood of the innocent person, we are really losing our justification for being on the land. We are insulting and deriding the higher dignity of the conception of man being close to Hashem, and in a certain sense it's a breach of the contract which Hashem gave this land to mankind, and especially which Hashem gave the land to Klal Yisrael. So the word tachanifa, which is used over here, is a very important idea in terms of our relationship to the land and the hypocrisy of not living a just life on the land. And the Torah continues and says, don't contaminate it, because this is also a tumah. It is an impurity. It is contamination. When we see injustice being done and blood being spilled needlessly, then by our not taking up this cause and acting justly, we are creating contamination in the land. That is what Rav Shimshon Rosh calls a physical lack of freedom. By not fulfilling our moral obligations, we are bringing tumah into the land. So what's unique about this mitzvah, Ari Miklat, was it's really one of the first mitzvahs that was performed even before the Jews came into the land of Israel. It was one of the first mitzvahs that the Jews had to do when they came into the land of Israel. We see that Moshe Rabbeinu instituted that on the eastern side of the Jordan that these Ari Miklat were set up. And this is one of the first things that the Jews had to do when they came into the land, was to set up the Ari Miklat, because it's these cities of refuge which show the importance of life and human life, because we understand that man is created in the image of Hashem, and it's through that recognition that we merit to have the land, and the merit of that sensitivity of the importance of human life, do we stay in the land and connect to the land, and that will not create a hypocrisy and a contamination. Thank you for listening, and we hope you have enjoyed and learned from these Divrei Torah. If you would like to listen to other shiurim given by members of the Skokie Community Kollel, please visit the podcast at www.skokiekollel.org. To share with us any comments, critiques, or to sponsor a week of Torah to Go, please contact the Kollel at 847-674-7959 or info@skokiekollel.org.